99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk, interviews, and professional sports news, all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds, and welcome to yet another edition of the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, joined by a special guest with us in studio today, Connor Allen. Connor, one of our news and sports interns, will be one of the people taking over this show next year. So, Connor, it is a pleasure to have you, and congratulations. We're excited to have you on the show next year.
Thank you. It means a lot. I'm excited to be on here with you guys.
Yeah, of course. Connor will be joined by Liam Lyons and Jaden Cohn as the three chairs taking over for me, Julian, and Joey next year. Fellas, we only got three red zones left.
That's wild.
Two more after that. So make sure you've been listening with us to keep it tuned in right here all the time, every Thursday, 6 to 7, for the next. We won't have a red zone next week because there's a baseball game. But after that, we'll have one more show, and then we'll do the senior send-off red zone special that we do every single year, which will definitely be probably a sad one, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's going to hit hard. It's going to hit harder in a couple weeks, I feel like, for sure.
Yeah, we just got to ride the high while we can. We got like 2 weeks of fun before it's just downhill and welcome to the real world.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about.
It's at the point where senioritis is fully kicked in. But we still got a show to put on, and we got plenty of coverage for you the next hour. We're going to kick it off here with Illinois State baseball. But throughout the show, we're going to round the bases with some Masters talk, national championship. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. We're going to talk the association, as there's been some just crazy news in the NBA that we definitely want to cover. But we'll start with Illinois State baseball first. Haven't really got to cover this team much because it felt like the seasons went so long for men's basketball and women's basketball that we continue to cover them. But this Illinois State baseball team right now, 15-16, but you know, you don't really need to look at the record that hard because currently they're 6-3 in conference, which is good enough for second in the Missouri Valley Conference, and coming off a big win on Tuesday against the University of Illinois. They were able to redeem themselves after they lost a week ago to University of Illinois in Champaign, but at home managed to run rule them in 8 innings, a 14-4 victory for the Illinois State Redbirds.
Good all-around game, honestly. Yeah, I was at the game. I was doing the call for the play-by-play here at WZND, but I thought that everybody kind of chipped in this game. You see a lot of the guys kind of chip in and get at least one hit, but it was really their 3-4 hitters being Pacella and Morris that kind of really got it all going. I mean, Daniel Pacella, he's been on a tear as of late, but Judah Morris also, I feel like he's kind of the unsung hero with this baseball team.
I mean, Pacella, they're going to league him soon, bro. I mean, he's like batting like 390 on the season with like multiple home runs. That guy is just on such a run. But the thing that impressed me the most yesterday was the bullpen, because that's kind of been the biggest issue with this team this season. Like, there's been multiple late inning games where like they'll allow like 6 runs in an inning, and like it'll just waste all the work of the bats. Like, that was the big worry for this team. And then going against some Big Ten competition in your bullpen, not allowing any runs after the starter was pulled, I think it says a lot to where Redbird baseball is currently at this point of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a good spot. Like you mentioned, the bullpen's a huge part of this season. That's been a really rough ride with the pitching this year, but you know the bats are going to be active almost every game, with top that order being so dangerous. So you know the bats are going to be going. It's really depending on the bullpen, and last night they were able to get it done.
I mean, this team just has so many hitters. Like the freshman Braden Bakes, what a run he's on. He had 3 home runs against Belmont. I mean, they got Noah Smith, they got Kyle Gibson, Shai Robinson has finally come around after the first like month of the season. He was batting like 190, and now he's back to almost the 300 level. So it's just, the bats are on fire for this team. It's really fun watching Illinois State baseball, because you know you're always going to be in for a good game.
Yeah, that's the thing that I, honestly, when you look at teams over our 4 years here at Illinois State, I feel like, you know, you always circle the pitching as a problem. But in all reality, I feel like the pitching is starting to come around a little bit. You know, you look back to last weekend in their set against Valpo, only surrendered, 7 runs the entire series. Won the first game 2-1, won the next game 18-3, and then lost the third game 3-2 in 10 innings. So really, I mean, I feel like the pitching is really starting to come around. And, you know, if they end up being able to put that together, I mean, you're talking about an Illinois State team that is going to be hosting the Missouri Valley Conference tournament in June or May, whenever it comes here. And really, I we'll talk more about the bats, but we already know what this offense can provide, and it's just been nothing but power and, you know, contact and just the way that they've been able to hit. I think if you could even have subpar pitching, it's going to go well for you.
Yeah, and I want to shout out Daniel Pacelle and his leadership, because the Redbirds, after a 14-12 collapse against SIUE, they had a record of 6-12, and now they're 14-15. And yesterday, after the game, I kind of asked Daniel Pacelle, like, oh, what was the turnaround? Like, what did you guys learn from that cold stretch, and how did it help you implement the style of baseball playing now? And he said, when you're going through times like that, it is easy to find someone and tell them to be better at this and that. But this team, we stuck together as a group, and we'll get through this together. It's not one guy or the other. It's the whole team. So there's not, like, pointing fingers in the locker room like we're seeing in certain associations. But the fact that, like, this team is locked in as a group, it's kind of impressive, and I can't wait to see how far they can go.
Yeah, to me, kind of what the theme of this team right now is kind of like patience. I know they kind of had a rough stretch in the beginning of the season, but as time goes by, you just see this team finally growing more chemistry. The top guys are obviously doing their thing, but you see the guys that are all like the rotational guys, the bullpen guys, like everybody else is kind of chipping in now too. So we've seen how this team has grown throughout the last like three or so years, but right now, it seems like everybody's finally clicking on.
Yeah, I'm going to say another quote that happened from after the game yesterday from the head coach, Steve Holm, because he was talking about how he thinks it was a slower start to the season because he thinks he overbooked themselves with not a lot of guys returning. And apparently, they had like an interview at the start of the season with all the NBC reporters, and they were telling him, like, oh, this team's going to be really good. And Steve Holm's response was, I said we will be really good once these new players get comfortable. That might be day one. That might be 10 days into it. I can't really tell you. And he doesn't think they got comfortable until the Oklahoma State win, where they beat nationally ranked competition. And then from there on, they've been pretty comfortable. The guys who were struggling early on are now hitting. It's just there's momentum everywhere, and like unless something like catastrophic breaks down, like I'd be surprised if we're not making some damage in the postseason.
I want to go back to Pacelle, because you know he is at this point, I mean, you can say he's a nationally recognized player. 407 on the season, 10 home runs, 36 RBIs. I mean, the 407 average is good enough for top 30 in the nation. He's top 30 in hits in the nation, and that's across all NCAA baseball. And I feel like most people just look at him and think of the power, but really what he's able to provide, and, you know, he was on the Red Zone last year, but legitimately he provides, like, a Juan Soto-like approach for this team. And he said, like, he tries to mirror his game off Soto. You see him hit the Soto shuffle here and there whenever he's up to the bat as well. But, you know, that's the kind of player you need in this middle of this lineup, especially when you're protected by Judah Morris right behind you, who also another player, top 30 in the country in home runs with 10 for himself and a .299 average. I mean, you have one of the best, you probably have the best hitters back-to-back in the entire Missouri Valley Conference in Dan Pacelle and Judah Morris.
Yeah, then they follow it up. You get Braden Bakes, Daniel Contreras. Like, there's not a lot of lineups where you can look at the whole order and be like, oh, yeah, I'm confident someone's going to get a hit here. And back to Pacelle, a .78 slugging percentage is just flat out ridiculous. Like, yeah, he's just going to hit the ball, and so is majority of this team. Like, they're just so fun to watch because you know you're just going to get constant action.
Another great thing for Pacelle, I mean, he's really increased his walk rate. He's a guy who has a great on-base percentage and as well as a great average, and he's able to hit really well, but he's such a fearsome hitter to go against that a lot of pitchers don't want to give him anything. He's really great at drawing walks. Same thing with Judah Morris. That's what makes, you know, the top of this lineup for the Redbirds so dangerous. And then you got Braden Bakes right behind him, who's been one of the hottest hitters on your team. Really dangerous guy to go against with runners in scoring positions. So this lineup, I mean, they're really, really built to win this, to potentially win this conference, and they've been hot as of late.
And I would like to ask you guys what you think the ceiling of this team is, because I remember before the season started when there was like some Twitter post trying to do projections like, oh, what's a sleeper mid-major teams, and like Illinois State was considered like a real threat to make it to NCAA tournaments. Do you still think that's like a possibility for the Redbirds, or should we still be a little bit realistic after the rough start to the season?
I think you have to take, especially in Valley play, it really matters. It's just like base. It's exactly like, what am I trying to say here? It's exactly like men's basketball, where you have to win out. You have to make the tournament if you want to get that bid. Especially because, you know, maybe if they ended up losing in Valley play, they could have made it, but in all honesty, their record out of conference just doesn't add up to that. Mm-hmm. So, in all reality, you're going to have to win. And, you know, right now, like, I think you look at this team and you could potentially say, yeah, maybe they are the favorite just because of the offense. I mean, I was looking at stats here as well. They lead the Missouri Valley Conference in home runs as a team with 43, and that's good enough for, I think, like the 51st in the entire country. So you know this team's going to hit the ball out of the park. It's just a matter of, you know, when the teams all get here in June to play this Missouri Valley Conference tournament, you got to make sure, you know, take care of home field advantage and potentially win this entire tournament. Because we saw last year a team that we're going to actually see this upcoming weekend with Evansville. You know, Evansville was the 4 seed in that tournament. Indiana State was nationally ranked at one point. And Indiana State ended up getting left out of the tournament because Evansville just went on an insane run in the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. And that's really all that matters. It's just like, it's like any mid-major.
Yeah, didn't Evansville go on like a crazy run in June as well?
Yeah, they ended up beating East Carolina. They were like the first 4 seed ever to come out of a regional. And especially for a mid-major, that's really impressive. They ended up losing to Tennessee, but still, I mean, winning, you know, losing to the best team in the team that ended up winning the national championship, that's nothing to hold your head over. And they actually got a game on Tennessee too. Like they won a game in that semifinal. So, yeah, I don't think Evansville is having as great of a season though. I don't think they've been able to put it together as much as they wanted to. Yeah, they're 5-4 right now. So in conference,
can't rule them out.
No, you can never rule them out. Especially, you know, the vibes are still there. Wes Carroll, they're going to be here this weekend. One of my buddies plays for the Evansville baseball team. So, always gotta, you know, be a little bit of a, gotta put the Evansville hat on here and there.
Yeah, to me, honestly, at this point in the season, it's really about taking it game by game. We've seen them at their highs, we've seen them at their lows, but I think this team, honestly, they could make it pretty far later in the season, but they need to keep winning their conference games. That's what matters the most. And we didn't really touch on it that much yet, but Pacella hit his 150th RBI on Tuesday, which is now 4th in program history.
That's insane.
So, like, if they keep playing at the pace where they're playing, where Pacella's not just only hitting himself, but he's also getting RBIs with the guys in front of him, I think this team could be pretty good. But also, they just need to get meshed their hitting and their pitching at the same time.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you can be a stat nerd and tell me like all the specifics, but at the end of the day, it comes down to vibes in the postseason. Like it's, right. It's easier said than done. It really seems like this team's clicking at a good time. Like when we did the interview yesterday, we were talking Daniel Pacella. They're all just slapping from behind as they were walking. Like, so the team's just clicking on all cylinders right now. If you got the vibes, that's really what's just going to help you play with confidence. Because baseball is such a mental sport. If you're not confident, don't believe in yourself, your team's just going to dip. And just it seems like the confidence is at an all-time high for this team.
And like Julian mentioned, I mean, the conference games are going to be so important for this team. They do play a tough schedule down the end, though. They have 1-2 teams in the MVC, Southern Illinois, then Missouri State in 3-game series, and back-to-back weekends, you got Iowa. So the schedule is going to get tough for ISU down the stretch. But like you said, I mean, as long as you have the confidence, the vibes are high, and with the way that, you know, this lineup has played, there's definitely a possibility where they could go down to Carbondale, beat Southern Illinois, could go beat Missouri State and make a run in the tournament. Like Ben mentioned, you know, it really doesn't matter, you know, the seeding, but if the confidence is there, it could happen.
I think we're going to have 3 Redbirds drafted this upcoming.
That's insane. That'd
I mean, awesome. At least 3. You would have to say Dan Pacella, obviously. I mean, I can only imagine what the ceiling is for him at this point, you know, where they potentially might have him in mock drafts and whatnot. And then they talked about at the beginning of the year, Shai Robinson, you know, he's come around entirely, and then Judah as well. The most insane thing that I want to mention is 8 of the 9 Redbird starters right now, their batting average is above .282, and then besides Luke Stolga, the rest of them are batting over .300, and then you have Dan Pacella batting .400. Like, they're just walking hits right now. And we've seen that in every single game that they've played at home so far this year. It's clear as day.
Yeah, and it's not even like they're just starting to click with the bats now. The bats have been hit at the start of the season. There's multiple games where, like, they've scored, like, 8 runs and still, like, have lost, which is just so insane to me. It's just this team knows how to hit the ball, so it doesn't really matter who they're playing against. You just can't rule them out because you know this team can get hot at any moment.
I like it, too, because you can just tell when guys have their off days is that other guys will pick them up, too, because having guys like this, 300 hitters, 250-plus hitters, one 400 hitter. I mean, that's pretty insane to me. You have that many guys with that potential to have as many crazy games as possible, but I think it matters to have that consistency.
Illinois State baseball plays a 3-game set against Evansville this upcoming weekend. You can listen to all 3 of those games here on 103.3 WZND. Connor, are you on a call for one of those, or you'll be in the studio? Connor will be holding down the studio on Saturday. So make sure to tune in this weekend for some Illinois State baseball action. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the major leagues here on the Red Zone. Mm-hmm. 103.3 WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, Connor Allen getting ready to talk some Major League Baseball. As we couldn't really talk about it last week, it was a basketball-heavy show. But Major League Baseball season is in full swing, as you can say. We have officially started the season, over 2 weeks gone by. And I guess we could just start with the team that in the National League Central and the Chicago Cubs and the start that they are on, currently 9-6 on the season, good enough for first place in the NL Central. Obviously still a long season ahead, but in all reality, I mean, what you've seen out of the Cubs early on, plus 28 run differential, that's good enough for the best in Major League Baseball. The Cubbies bats are very much hot as they go into Los Angeles this upcoming weekend to have a date with the Dodgers, which is going to be exciting after, you know, they got swept in those Tokyo games. But still, nonetheless, Cubbies off to a hot start, and I think a lot of us are liking what we're seeing so far.
Extend Kyle Tucker, please. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. I knew how good he was before, but now we really just see how good this Cubs team can be when they have a real slugger in this lineup, because Dansby Swanson, we expected Dansby to be the guy with this team. We expected him to be the hitter, but now that he doesn't really have that much like pressure on him, yeah, we can rely on other people. We see other guys start performing more, especially like Seiya Suzuki too.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible start to the season both ways. I mean, Kyle Tucker, you can't even put into words what he's done so far for the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, when they did make this trade, that was the big thing. It's like, you know, it's been a really long time since the Cubs have had a superstar. Mm-hmm. I think you could probably say the last one that they've really had is, you know, Javi Baez, maybe in that MVP, that runner-up MVP season. Chris Bryant when he won the MVP. But, you know, it's been a while, and they've just been trying to get by with this lineup that I think, you know, hits well for contact and sometimes put the ball out of the park. But, you know, Kyle Tucker changes that entirely in the middle of this lineup, because it takes so much more pressure, like you said, off Dansby Swanson, off Seiya Suzuki. And we've seen that early on in the season, how much that pressure's been taken off them. Seiya Suzuki, you know, we could talk about Kyle Tucker all day and how he's probably the best hitter in Major League Baseball right now. Seiya Suzuki's right up there with him. He's mashing home runs. He had a three-hit day the other night against Texas. Everything across this lineup feels good. I would say the only like thing that you probably want to see that I think can make this team complete, but we knew there was going to be growing pains, is obviously the development of Matt Shaw and Pico Armstrong. But right now it doesn't really matter. You don't have to rely on them too much when, you know, 7 through 9 are hitting just as well. And, you know, you still get the incredible defense and base running out of both those guys.
And the lineup's been great for the Cubs, like you mentioned, but I mean, the bullpen's still been an issue. It's been a problem this year. There's been a lot of heart attack games with the Cubs, but, if this team continues to produce on the offensive side like they have this year, I don't see them really having too many issues in the NL Central this year. It's on the weaker side. So really the bullpen's been a struggle, but if this offense continues to produce the way they have and can continue to produce up until the All-Star game or the trade deadline, that's when they can go out, they can make some moves for the bullpen and the rotation. They could become really, really solidify themselves as true contenders in the NL.
And honestly, it's about consistency, because we've seen this team have really good starts like this, and then around the time it's like June, July, everything kind of goes downhill, then up again in August, and we think we're going to make the playoffs, but everything kind of just ends after that. But with this team now, it kind of feels different, because they kind of have hit the holes that they've always needed to hit the last couple of years, because Tucker, you got the slugger, but also you have Imanaga in his second season now in the MLB. You have Justin Steele, who's hopefully healthy again. I know he just went out again with another injury, but hopefully around the time July, August comes around, Cade Horton maybe makes an appearance, but right now it's really just about staying consistent.
I also love what I've seen out of Matt Boyd early on,
too.
I think he's probably slated to start tomorrow, as he wasn't in that Rangers series, but Matt Boyd, I mean, you know, this is a guy that kind of rejuvenated his major league career a couple of years ago. You know, he played in Detroit for the longest time and just never really, like, was a reliever all over the place. And then Cleveland just signed him out of nowhere last year, made him a starter, was solid last year. Not saying Matt Boyd's going to win the Cy Young, but, you know, you know, a guy that's put up zero runs, of six plus innings pitched in both of his starts, something to hang your head over for the Cubs early on, and I think he could be a piece as well. But I do want to go back to the bullpen because that is definitely an area of concern. Porter Hodge, though, has been amazing out of the bullpen, and that's like the one piece where you're like, oh man, like I feel good when Porter Hodge comes in. But, you know, I feel like some of the signings like Eli Morgan, Caleb Theobar, and more importantly, your closer, Ryan Pressly, you know, it feels like it's Hector Neris part two with Ryan Pressly, just because you're so scared every time he comes into that ninth inning. But I'm pretty sure he leads the league in saves, which is crazy because it just, he gives you a heart attack every time. But still, nonetheless, I think this is a team that's suited well. I like where they're headed. And as Connor said, you know, as the season goes along and they keep winning like this, you know, some of these issues that you're worried about could be addressed at the trade deadline.
I mean, I know we, like, love our Cubs. I'm just curious, this early on in the season, where would you rank them among the rest of the National League?
I think it's still early. I really do not know what's going on with Atlanta right now because, like, Atlanta going into the year, I picked them to win the National League East. And the NL West is off to a roaring start. I mean, the Giants, we knew. Giants are kind of similar to the Cubs where it's just been, like, very similar teams.
They're close.
In some ways, they always finish with the same record, and it's like, it feels like they've been looking for a superstar for the longest time as well, and it's like, when are they finally going to do it? Off to a 9-3 start, that's a very good start for the Giants. I would say right now, in terms of National League ranks, it's still early. I guess you could put them at, I'd put them at 3 right now. I would put them at 4 because, like, Atlanta, like, I feel like Atlanta's going to turn it around. I mean, I've seen that, like, no other team has ever come back from an 0-7 start or something like that they started from. Like, no team's ever made the playoffs starting 0-7. I think it was, like, one team ever, which is crazy to think about because it's the Braves, and I feel like the Braves' magic will probably be able to do it. But I would say the Dodgers, obviously, they're the cream of the crop, the World Series champs, and then I'd probably put the Phillies right in front of the Cubs.
To me, yeah, I'd probably say at least top five at this point. Obviously, we have the Dodgers. They're always going to be the top one. I'm not going to even lie about that. The Giants, they've also been pretty good this season. The Phillies have also been pretty hot as of late. But with the Cubs, how they've been playing last 2 weeks now, even though they had the rough start also in Japan, I'd definitely say like probably like four, yeah, three to four.
Around can't forget about right Arizona now. Either.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, like you said, Atlanta being that bad right now is pretty surprising, even though Acuña's out. He's pretty much out a lot now over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I'm still pretty shocked that team's this bad right now.
They're about to get Spencer Strider back, so that will be a big boost for them. I want to talk, did you guys see, I mean, it's just insane how unlucky this team is. Last night, the Chicago White Sox, I think it was 3-1 in the top of the ninth, two outs, base hit in the left field. They score one, 3-2. Mike Tauchman, former Cub, love him forever. But Mike Tauchman, rounding third, like pulls a hamstring running down the line. Doesn't even, like, he would have been safe probably by a mile and they would have tied the game up. White Sox, they're the worst team in the league yet again, 2-10. I just can't, they're just cursed, man. It's a curse.
They had so much hope after the first, like, two games.
Like, yeah.
Oh, my God, we're 1-0, we're 1-0. And then all of a sudden, yeah, back to reality.
I think they started 2-2, and, you know, 2-2 for White Sox fans, I mean, being 500 alone, it was, like, the first time that they were at 500 since March 31st of last season. And everyone was like, you know, maybe don't think too much, like, maybe there's a chance. I think their starters, like, they all went six plus innings and didn't allow a run or something like that. And it's just blown up in their face completely. But I still, this is the take that I want to say, and I don't know if you guys agree with it, because 2-10, probably it does not help with this take right now, but I have a weird, I'm telling you, the White Sox are going to have the biggest jump in win total in Major League Baseball, just because I just don't think it's possible that they can be as bad as they were last year.
I think it's possible.
I think, based on what I've seen early on, yeah, certainly, but I don't know.
It's also just so bad that you just don't expect it to happen.
Yeah, right. I mean, either way, if they have the biggest jump in win total in baseball, they'll still be the worst team in the league. They'll just have 60 wins instead of 40 wins. Like, that, all they need to do is win 19 more games. They're historically unlucky next year. It's impossible. One other thing I want to talk about. I think this is the biggest talk of Major League Baseball early on. You know, we could talk about the Cubs and White Sox all we want, but the torpedo bat. and what has been going on with this new bat technology that was apparently in the game last year. People had the bat last year. It just wasn't talked about as much. Apparently, Cody Bellinger had it with the Cubs last year. And the Yankees hired a guy to bring in this new bat technology where they put all the wood in the barrel, so you're barreling balls up instead of just trying to make contact. So basically, you're trying to hit for home runs. And the way that the bat looks, like, it looks weird, but it's legal because it doesn't, like, it's like the max length that a barrel can be. And, you know, early on, I mean, the Yankees are 7-5 right now, still pretty good, but, you know, the torpedo bat became a thing when people saw them hitting for 20 runs and 7 home runs in a game, and everyone's like, oh, cheating Yankees yet again. But really, in all reality, everyone across Major League Baseball is using these bats, good or bad for baseball. I think they're awesome.
My thing is, the most difficult thing to do in any sport is to hit a baseball.
Yes.
You need to be very coordinated to hit a baseball. If you're not coordinated, you're not going to hit a baseball. So these bats are perfectly fine to me. Everybody's able to use them. So if everybody has a fair chance to use it, it's not like it's an Astros thing where they're stealing signs. Like, I think it's fine.
I think it's fine as well, because, like, you look at, like, the tush push in the NFL. Everyone's allowed to do it. It's just only one team has been able to perfect the craft, and that's why everybody's mad at it. If everybody's allowed to use a torpedo bat, I really don't see a problem in it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fine. It feels like baseball consistently tries to set themselves back when it comes to innovating the game and changing the game. And, you know, with the way teams are hitting nowadays, the way teams are pitching nowadays, it's getting increasingly more difficult. So I don't really see an issue with having a little bit more of an advantage for batters.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, like, I think when they first got introduced, everyone was like, oh, these stupid bats, like, of course the Yankees, the cheating Yankees. Everyone's using them now. Dansby Swanson and Nico Hoerner are both using them. They're off to some pretty good starts to early on in the year. If everyone wants to use the torpedo bat, just like Connor said, way to push the game forward. If everyone's going to be hitting home runs like Barry Bonds again, that's perfectly fine. They're not injecting anything into their bodies. They're just changing the wood that they use in their bats. So I'm perfectly fine with it, and I'm excited to see where the home run numbers kind of go from here with this potential torpedo bat. But yeah, we have plenty of baseball to talk about throughout the rest of the season. Then again, we only have 2 more weeks here, so we don't really have that much to talk about. But when we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to be talking a lot of different sports, including college basketball, the Masters, and so much more here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, Connor Allen, rounding the bases, one of our favorite segments where we bring in some stories. And in all reality, these stories are pretty massive over the last couple days. We have one going on right now, but we're going to start with the one that happened on Monday night. I feel like so much of this show, maybe outside of football, because we talk about football literally so much in the first half of the school year, but more specifically the second half, it has been really a college basketball show. And I think that we got a really good game to end the year between the Florida Gators and Houston Cougars. Florida Gators national champions, in a game that just was, it was such a fun game to watch. It was such bad basketball, like legitimately horrible basketball, but that's what made it so much fun.
Okay, first point, heavily disagree. That was two beautiful defenses going at it.
If no, that's what I'm saying.
Nerd, you
okay, more
for that.
Bad offenses, should I say. Like, it just, like, the defense, yeah, I know, it was gross, should I say.
It was gross. But secondly, to all the Cinderella nerds out there that are complaining we didn't have any Cinderellas, shut up. Like, that was some of the 3 best games of basketball I've seen in a very long time. That whole Final Four was incredible, and just, shout out to the Gators, because it really just seemed like it was Houston's game. The game plan, Kelvin Sampson was throwing out there to double team as the centers instantly, and the bigs, they just didn't have the skills to get rid of the ball. It was creating a bunch of turnovers. Houston was getting in pace, but the Gators, they made comebacks in every single game. You just can't rule them out, and that was some beautiful basketball. I don't even know where to start talking about it.
I'm happy that you Duke lovers just saw a loss to Houston.
I'm a Duke lover.
He is a Duke lover.
Me?
Yes, you.
I just picked him to win.
Yeah. I thought you'd been loving Duke the whole year, but yeah. I thought every single of the last 3 games were pretty good. I mean, I had no complaints with them.
it was pretty much this really good coaching mixed with a lot of guys that just wanted to win. Not really anybody that's just like top heavy. It's just a lot of guys that wanted to win.
I mean, look at those Florida, like their national rankings coming out of high school. Like Walter Clayton was a zero star. Isaiah Mitchell was a zero star. The highest ranking I think they had was a 3-star coming out of high school. So it proves you don't just need 5 stars to win games. It just comes down to who wants it more. It's just what a beautiful story that was.
Yeah, I mean, just the most insane thing for me, like the stat that I look back on this national championship and I'm like, wow, was the fact that Florida only led the game for like 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. And they're the national champions right now. And that's the beauty of college basketball. It's all about ebbs and flows and the swings of, more specifically in this sport than any other, just because you could get hot at the right time and it changes the game. And we saw that with Florida, but it still felt like Houston had their foot on their neck the entire game. Like, it's just, every time you felt like Florida was making a comeback, it was like Houston was like, nope, just wait a second. And they were able to keep it like an 8-point advantage, like just keep, wave them off for the longest time. And then really in those last 4 to 5 minutes, Florida just put their foot on the gas, was able to find a hole in Houston's defense, and, you know, ended up coming out on top and being national champs.
Yeah, and the hole Florida was able to find is if you can get Houston on the break, you're going to get buckets. Houston's so good on defense because they're able to set up and get their system running. But once Florida started forcing turnovers and going coast to coast, Houston just was not able to keep up. And I want to shout out Rick Pitino for a second because everyone gave him garbage when he benched his star in the final minutes. Houston needed to bench Uzan so bad. Like, I get people miss, but his misses were, like, bad. You can clearly tell, like, he wasn't ready for the moment. I know I say this as I'm just some guy who's, like, a fat bum who sits on a seat and talks basketball, but, like, you can just watch Uzan. Like, they're not bricks that are rolling in and out. Like, he's hitting, like, the backboard and, like, bricking by, like, miles. He should have been out of the game, and he had some costly misses that really hurt Houston.
Yeah, I know you kind of just hated on Houston's coaching, but I am going to say I love Kelvin Sampson, and I kind of wish that he kind of won this one because you just see how much progression he's had with Houston in general. I mean, I'm not hating on your take at all. I wasn't hating on Kelvin Sampson.
Kelvin Sampson's a genius.
I fully agree. I'm just glad that Houston finally got to this moment, but the fact that they just blew it in those last 20 seconds, you had 20 seconds to get off one shot, and then you wait the whole 20 seconds to take a shot like that. Like,
but you don't take the shot.
Yeah, you don't take it. That's a problem. Like,
I respect the move, though. Like, if you're going for the win, you go for the win. It's just a matter of getting the shot off, obviously.
You have to get a set play if you're doing that. They kind of seem like the play that they had just broke off, and they're just scrambling. At that point, I feel like they just needed a quick bucket.
And that loss also hurt for me for Jamal Shedd because, like, mm-hmm. he kind of set the culture for this team. Like, everybody's enamored with him last year. Like, he brought that locker room together, and that was supposed to be the big win for him. I know he's in the NBA right now hooping for the Raptors. So happy for him, but it's just, like, that just stings, man. Like, if I was, like, a Houston basketball fan, I don't even think I'd be on, like, Red Zone right now. Like, I'd need, like, a week just to myself because, like, you're a team that was literally nothing a decade ago. Then Sampson came in and just completely revamped this organization. And that was your moment. And you hope to, cause like, let's say you get a shot off and it misses. Like, oh man, that's still a heartbreak. Don't get me wrong. But just how it ended, he can't even get his own rebound cause then it's a turnover. Nobody gets further the ball. Like, I would be speechless for like multiple days.
And I know we're a while away from the NBA draft, but Walter Clayton, I mean, his draft stock has shot up with this tournament. He had an off night during the national championship, but still, I mean, the way he played this year for Florida, the way he came over from Iona and became an absolute star for this team, his stock really, really rising during the draft process. Yeah,
and I call it this, like, these analysis, they suck at their jobs. I'm like, Stephen A. can, like, compare them to, like, Cade Cunningham, and, like, they're, outside of looks, they don't play the same, like, at all. That really bothered me. And then I saw another guy compare him to, like, Keegan Murray. It's like, Keegan Murray's, like, a 6'10 stretch four. Like, how does he possibly play like Walter Clayton? Like, do you guys just not watch basketball, or you just, like, look at tweets, like, oh, I'll make a take for something like that? But at the end of the day, Walter Clayton's a bucket. I really hate people like, oh, he's older, you can't draft him the first round. Yes, you can. Just watch him play basketball. This guy can get a bucket. He can drive to the rim at will, and he can shoot the three ball when it's needed. And I'm a big Walter Clayton enjoyer.
Well, congratulations to the Florida Gators. College basketball officially over. Can't wait for it to be back next year. The next thing I wanted to toss up to you guys, and we could kind of go around, since we'll miss next week, we'll have plenty of draft coverage the day of the first round, so we'll see what happens from here to there, but I want to get a pulse on you guys, you know, 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. I think everyone's wondering, what are the Chicago Bears going to do with that first overall pick? Number 10, correct?
Yes.
So number 10, I just want to go around the table and, like, where do we think we're headed with this? I know there's a lot of choices. I know there's a lot of talks. and I think we all have our opinions.
Yeah, so ever since the season ended, I've always thought that this team needs to go best player available. Mm-hmm. But once you could go best player available is when you get the guys you need in the trenches. And I thought they kind of did it the way I didn't expect them to in the trade, doing it the trade way. But they filled up the trenches as much as they wanted to, a starter-wise. They need to get the depth in there, too. But right now, I'm expecting them to draft Ashton Jeanty in the first round if he's there.
I would love Ashton Jeanty. I think that's a luxury at the running back position. But, I mean, the trenches are huge. Braxton Jones is still a bit of a question mark at left tackle. If Will Campbell or Armad Membo fall to you at 10, I think you got to go with one of them. I think only one of them will be on the board at that time. But I think going left tackle would be the smartest move there just to solidify the position.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards trade down. I know it's like such a boring answer, but it's just like every other year. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you get Jeanty, you will not hear me complaining. I'll be kicking my feet in excitement, but it's like we don't see running back classes like this too frequently. Like there's so many dogs, and it's just our edges still suck. Like I know we have Montez Sweat, but like I don't believe in our defensive line still enough. So I wouldn't mind trading down.
Egg-a-da-bingo. However you say his name.
So I know you can get like Mike Green out of Marshall. There's a guy from Tennessee who I know has character issues, but if you can hoop, you can hoop in my eyes. So I'm conflicted. I really am. I just don't want Tyler Warren at 10. I'm going to be so for real. I really like, I get he's exciting and you want to go best player available. And if Tyler Warren is that, I get it, but it's just, I don't care for two tight ends, especially with Cole Kmet having somewhat of a paycheck. I'd rather address the defensive line first before we draft Tyler Warren at 10.
That's a beautiful thing that I think they did with this free agency and how they were able to fill these holes is they can really, for the entire draft, not just their first overall pick, the entire draft go best player available at basically every spot. And I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Joey, where I'm like, dude, Ashton Jeanty in a Bears uniform would just be the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, especially after, like, what he did this past year. Like, you know, probably should have been the Heisman, but, you know, I digress. It would be so cool. But at the same time, you know, trenches have been such a problem, and they've been able to fill every spot. But I don't think it's the worst thing to have depth at every spot either. And, you know, the one player that I circle that I'm like, oh man, like I would really love if he was there, like Will Campbell, I'm not complaining whatsoever.
Not at all.
And it really goes into, like, I do think the Bears need a running back. Like, I do think they need someone to pair with DeAndre Swift because, granted, I think if DeAndre Swift's contract wasn't as big as it was, I think he'd probably have gotten cut this offseason.
100%.
But they're still, like, they're going to draft another running back, and there's just, it's so deep. You know, even if they trade back and they're just like, we're going to go for Omarion Hampton, like, fine. That's that's cool. Or, you know, you have so many options in the second round, too, with Judkins and Caleb Johnson and who's the other Ohio State running back I'm missing?
Travion Henderson.
Thank you. So, Jeanty would be cool, but in all reality, I think getting some more depth at the trenches and some of the names that Connor mentioned as well wouldn't be the worst.
Two things on this. Firstly, I'm not sure how true this is, but I've been seeing reports that, like, some analysis would be, like, shocked if Judkins makes it out of the first round. So I think we might see, or Henderson, I'm going to be honest, I get it confused.
They're both beasts.
Yeah,
but
they're both unreal. And secondly, I've also heard rumors, like, the Jets are trying to clear out their running back room. If we trade for Breece Hall, I'll be so mad.
What is that? Like, apparently Glenn wants, like, a running back by community. Like, Braylon Allen is still there. I think that they're going to be just fine with Braylon Allen and Breece Hall. I don't understand why they want to draft potentially Ashton Jeanty at number 7.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what you guys were saying with the what they should do in the draft. My thing is with taking a tackle or taking an edge, I don't really see any solidified just studs in the top 10 at either of those positions that would be filling our positions of need right now. Obviously, I think Will Campbell is more of a guard than a tackle. His arms are not long whatsoever. In the NFL, he's just going to get blown back by a lot of guys. But on the inside, I think he's just going to be a beast. Yes, he's going to be a beast. But you already just signed Jonah Jackson to a bigger deal. He's got Joe Tooney also for 2 years on a bigger deal. You also need to play him because he's probably going to be one of the captains on your team with Caleb Williams. But right now, I just think that this team just needs just more studs on it. You need more guys that are just going to take more of the pressure off of Caleb Williams himself, and that's where Ashton Jeanty or maybe some other guys on either side of the ball come into play.
I almost agree with you. You're pretty much right on everything, but I really do think Mike Green's that guy out of Marshall. I mean, he's an athletic freak. Despite not being, like, too, like, much in weight, he still just brings down these tackles and just pancakes them and gets to the quarterback. I think he is that good. If he's off the board, then I 100% agree with you, Julian. But, like, I genuinely think Mike Green's that good.
Yeah, he's such an athletic freak. Like, he could be so good in the NFL. It's so tough to say what Ben Johnson's going to want to do, though, because a couple years ago, the Lions drafted Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round. No one saw that coming after they just signed David Montgomery that offseason. So it's so hard to say what Ben Johnson's going to want to look at in the draft and what this offense is going to look like come next season.
We'll have plenty of draft coverage in 2 weeks from now. Excited to see where the Bears go with this. Excited to see how really the whole draft shakes up. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's still a mystery as to what exactly is going to happen. So a lot of excitement there. Really quick before we go to break, just got to mention it. The official kickoff to spring for me is officially underway. The Masters tournament, I wish we could spend all 15 minutes on it, but I understand not all golf guys here, so it's okay. I'm just going to go on a soapbox. It's the most beautiful just sporting event in the entire world. It's such an exclusive event. You get there, just the food, the merchandise, everything that comes with it, just a beautiful event, and I can't wait to see how it ends up shaking up. I don't know if you guys are rooting for anyone specific, but right now, Scott, I mean, we have Justin Rose in the lead. He's 7-under through the first round as we officially finish the first round. Scottie Scheffler, 4-under. Bryson DeChambeau, 3-under. Some excitement there. I don't know. Are you guys rooting for anyone specifically?
I'm rooting for it to end, if I'm being
honest. Oh, my God.
If Tiger Woods was in it, I'd root for Tiger Woods.
Oh. I'm not sure if I'm rooting for Tiger, if I'm being honest.
Tiger's not in it.
Good. Scottie Scheffler's fun.
He's cool.
Yeah, right.
I know he's been like the top dog as of late, so.
Yeah, I meant that, Ben.
I got the Scottie Scheffler shirt on right now. I mean, that's the world number one. He's the GOAT. You rooting for anyone specific, Connor?
I mean, I'm not too big into golf, but I mean, I know Justin Rose. It's still early, but I know Justin Rose is not the favorite to be three strokes up on Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler. But I mean, day one, so it's so tough to say what's going to happen come Sunday. Yeah.
There's going to be a ton that happens. Just want to give a quick shout out. Freddie Couples, the 65-year-old, is 1-under right now, tied for 11.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that was you, Joey?
That's like the thing. No. Like, for these major tournaments, they invite past winners. Yeah, like, they can golf cool. as long as they want. And usually, like, you know, John Daly goes out there and just golfs with his shoes and socks off and smokes cigarettes and just enjoys himself while golfing at Augusta. But Freddie Couples, clearly, what a day for him. 1-under. Probably will fall apart at some point, but it'd be a fun story. All right, when we come back, we're talking the association, the National Basketball Association, right here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster getting ready to talk some NBA as we are officially in the last week of the NBA season, correct? Last week of the NBA season?
Yeah, correct.
And I mean, it's just some groundbreaking news happened this weekend. You can't even put into words what this year has been for the NBA. I mean, it's the soap opera that keeps on giving as, you know, a week before the playoffs, the Denver Nuggets fire their winningest coach in franchise history, the guy that brought them their only NBA title to Denver. Mike Malone gets fired a week before the playoffs with really no explanation. That's been the best part about the NBA this year. Things are just happening that just don't make sense, and we're not getting any explanation. While NBA is like the media king of sports, we should be on the scenes understanding what's going on. What is going on in this league? It is on fire. Why are we firing coaches that have won championships?
Yeah, where's Woj when you need him? We would have an explanation if Woj was on this. Is Shams a fraud?
I mean, he's the only one that breaks the news at this point, which is fine, but Woj did drop a bomb, like a bomb emoji, like a week before it happened. Did you think he knew about the Mike Malone thing coming, like, before anyone else?
There's no way. I mean, that'd be so sick, but, like, there's no way.
I don't understand. Joey, you're a bigger NBA head than I am. I really cannot wrap my head around this one. I don't understand what the Nuggets are doing, especially a week before the playoffs.
All right, so I'll geek out for a second. I won't try and take too much time. So from what I'm seeing is he just kind of lost the locker room. Like, there's a lot of hate for Westbrook. And apparently Westbrook is getting the superstar treatment that, like, rubs some people the wrong way. But in today's age of basketball, you can't really be a hard-headed coach like you were back in the day. Like, he went out in a press conference and said, yeah, these guys don't watch tape. And apparently he, like, lost the locker room in that moment. But the guy who 100% deserved to be fired was Kelvin Booth. Like, I didn't think Malone deserved it, but Kelvin Booth's a fraud. I mean, the roster construction of this team sucks. Outside of Jokic, there's not really anybody else can trust to get a bucket with Jamal Murray and MPJ being inconsistent. There's no defense. There's absolutely no depth. So they gave Mike Malone nothing to work with. And that's what, like, makes me sick about NBA in 2025 is coaches are such a scapegoat. Like, yeah. They give them, like, complete garbage. Like, just what I just threw in the recycling bin earlier, said, all right, make this work on a court. And, like, oh, why didn't this work? Why didn't you make our garbage an NBA contender? And now the Nuggets, they're one game away from the play-in. Like, they're the four seed right now. And in two games, they might be in the play-in and just completely miss the playoffs. And when you have Jokic, a guy of his quality, and you're going to waste the prime of his season, it's just such a joke. Kelvin Booth, you suck. And I can't believe you took Mike Malone down with him, too.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, Booth, he did a bad job of constructing that roster. Terrible. After you win a championship, you let Bruce Brown walk, go to the Pacers, and you replace him with Peyton Watson. You let Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you let him go to the Magic, and you replace him with a rookie. And the whole Russell Westbrook thing in the locker room with Michael Malone, that's a whole confusing thing that we probably won't know too much about. But, yeah, I mean, the roster construction's poor, and you're wasting a bad year or a great year from Nikola Jokic and the financial situation there in Denver. It's rough. They're in a competitive conference. It's going to get tougher down the stretch here, too.
It's crazy. Jokic isn't going to win MVP just off this garbage because him and SGA have been, like, so close in competition. But the Thunder, they're 14 games ahead. Like, I don't know how it's not going to be SGA. And the reason Jokic isn't going to win another MVP, people like to say it's voter fatigue. It's not. It's this garbage Kelvin Booth gave him to work with. And it's really just such a shame.
My thing with it, I just don't believe that story. I think there's some underlying stuff that we just still don't know about what's 100%. Going on between Denver, and could be Jokic, also Mike Malone. I think Mike Malone is probably a scapegoat in this whole situation, but right now, I just think what you gotta do is just make Nikola Jokic happy no matter what, because right now, you're in a very dangerous spot. He's about to be up on the later edge of his career right now, still playing high level basketball, about to be like a top three center of all time. Mm-hmm. But with
probably
that,
already is.
Probably already is.
Top one.
Scary, yeah. Probably already is, but with that, there's no way you can't build a team around him. This same roster since whenever they won, I think 2022, it just has not been the same whatsoever. Jamal Murray does not play good in the regular season. He plays good in the postseason, but if you're not in the postseason, what does that matter? Then you also have Aaron Gordon, who just seems like he's checked out with this whole entire team. The only other guy that really seems like he cares is Christian Brown.
Oh, he's been open. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a diamond in the rough. Christian Brown, he just shows up when it matters most, but what we need to consider is there's nothing that can't happen in the NBA. Who says Jokic like isn't going to be traded after this offseason with all the garbage?
That's what I'm saying.
I heard that the top team is the Chicago
Bulls. I'm not buying that.
There's been a lot of Lakers, too. I've seen that. But that's, I feel like that's every off or like every time a top player
becomes. Imagine they traded LeBron to Denver.
LeBron would retire on the spot.
Like, no, this is Luka's team like, now.
You know that video of like Rob Gronkowski, like they were trying to trade him to the Lions. He's like, you can't, I'm retired. And they came out of retirement. That's literally what LeBron would do if they said, oh, we're trading you to Denver. Enjoy Jamal Murray.
I mean,
Ronnie with him.
But you could make us very, like, the West is so, it's insane how
best
good
conference
the West
ever.
Is. This is probably the best Western conference we've ever, like, a best conference we've ever seen ever. Right?
It doesn't matter the sport. I'm just going to say this. The level of competition is ridiculous. There's like six teams that can actually compete, and there's like another five that are competing for a play-in spot. Like, it's just disgusting how good this conference is.
You have the Minnesota Timberwolves as the 8th seed right now in the play-in tournament, and they're 2 games back from the 4 seed of Denver Nuggets.
Yes.
Like, it's insane. And meanwhile, like, we're firing coaches that won championships, and Billy Donovan's still the head coach of the Chicago.
No.
I'm just saying, that's just an example.
That makes me so mad.
I want to go back to that take about head coaches being scapegoats in this league, which is absolutely the truth. I don't even know why we take head coaches seriously in the NBA, because in all reality, it doesn't matter. They're just a piece to the puzzle of trying to make your stars happy. And that's all it is. You know, in most other leagues, yes, I feel like there will be star players that get upset with their coaches, but I feel like for the most part, if you have one of the best coaches in the league, which I'm sorry, I might not be the biggest NBA head, but I know Mike Malone is going to get a bag wherever whoever's head coaching job opens up this offseason. That just doesn't happen in other leagues, and they're just so replaceable in this sport compared to others.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Popovich is guy's replacement. I mean, you saw what Mike Malone was able to develop Jokic into, because Jokic was just some second round guy. I forgot who was playing behind him. He was playing behind centers I never even heard of, and he turned Jokic to a star. Now give him Victor Wembanyama, and Wembanyama might be in conversations to be like the best player of all time if he gets Mike Malone. It's just, it's going to be ridiculous. I don't know what Denver's plan is. Like, I get if it's that toxic, like, you gotta deal with it. Deal with it in the offseason. Like, I feel like that's just so obvious, yeah. Because when you have a player like Jokic, you're going to compete. You're going to have a chance. So ruining it this early, like, genuinely just blows my mind.
And I've seen reports that they're going for Dan Hurley. I mean,
if
Malone doesn't work out, what makes you think that Dan Hurley's way of coaching is going to work out? Jokic is going to see Dan Hurley screaming at him and just walk out the floor. I mean, the way that Denver's working right now, you need to get a top dog that's a good coach, but also a coach that's well-respected and experienced.
I'm sorry. I'm happy for J.J. Redick and that it's working out with the Lakers, and it seems like it's a good situation, but Dan Hurley with LeBron would have been the funniest thing of all time.
100%.
Like, let's just be real. I know Dan Hurley. I personally love Dan Hurley. I know that
I'm a Dan Hurley.
I know he turns people off. Like, he, like, obviously is whatever, but it would have been so funny if he would have been with LeBron this year.
I mean, yeah, he cares a lot about the game, clearly, Dan Hurley. So, I mean, yeah, it would have been a really entertaining pairing there in LA for sure.
All right, we got 5 minutes left. I mean, by the time we're here next week, I think the NBA playoffs might have already started.
Playing.
Oh, we won't even be here next week. So in 2 weeks, the NBA playoffs will officially start. I would just like to go around and just, who do we think? What's the teams? What's the matchups for the finals? Like, in such a deep West where I feel like you could flip a coin for the most part, but like 75% of that coin is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know. Where do we think that we're headed in terms of potential finals matchups?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Hollywood script. I'm going Boston-LA.
Oh.
I think the coolest final. I mean, they would make so much money. It would be disgusting. And it's just, this is going to be probably my hot take. I'm not bought in on the Thunder. Like, I know that's a crazy thing to say when they're 6-6-14.
Bro, they're literally...
No.
Hold up, let me cook.
You know
the Thunder are like...
Yes.
They might finish the season with like the sixth best record in NBA history.
Everton's probably listening to this about it.
Me and Everton had this conversation. Everton agreed with me on this. J-Dub as a second option in the playoff is concerning because towards like some players rise in March in the playoffs. He hasn't proven that yet. And it worries me a bit. I know this team is so deep, but in the playoffs, you need another guy to help Shea when they figure out the scheme to him. I don't trust J-Dub. And we're going to go back to conversation. Julian, I think we had maybe in the second episode of Red Zone. This team needs to trade for Giannis in the offseason.
We talked about that for a good 10 minutes.
Don't break it up.
I think they need to trade for an actual second star. And the Thunder are an amazing team. I just worry with them not having a second option. Give me Boston, L.A.
I got to go Cleveland, L.A. I think Cleveland. I like they
that would be awesome.
That'd be cooler.
That would be cool just because no LeBron and everything. Yeah. But they've really separated themselves in the Eastern Conference. They're much better than I think anyone thought they'd be. Boston's going to give them a good fight. Same thing with New York, maybe even Indiana. But, I mean, I got to go Cleveland, L.A. just because that would be such a great matchup. So many good storylines in that one.
You know, ever since 2012, I've kind of just wanted to see this team win just because of the movie Thunderstruck. But now it just really seems like I think it's their year, man. Like, this team is so good all around, and SGA is just proving to me more and more that he's just a playoff stud and just a total stud in the NBA. But I think that Boston also is just, like, going to be so hard to beat in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. They've already been there multiple times now. Cleveland is still a young team. That's still a young team that works out very well together, but can they beat that team in a 7-game series? I don't know. OKC, on the other hand, I think their depth really is what does it for me because, yes, you said J-Dub hasn't really played that well in the playoffs yet. I think he's still young, early for him. Hartenstein's kind of been there, too, now to be more of a vet. But Caruso also now, too, is going to be a crucial piece in just keeping that team just, like, together and toned. But I think it's going to be OKC and Boston that I have OKC winning it all.
Let me cook here for a second. Give me the Detroit Pistons versus the Houston. No, I'm just kidding.
It was a good Red Zone, everybody. We'll catch y'all next week.
I'm kind of with Julian on this one. I know I feel like I've used this analogy before, but the Oklahoma City Thunder just remind
don't
me.
Don't say it.
The Chicago Cubs.
Oh, that's what I say, the team of destiny.
No, they were.
You
they
did
remind
that to Detroit.
Me,
you can't do it.
They remind me of the Cubs in 2016, where like last year, like they were so good. And then it just like, it fell apart and they had to get the pieces right. And I feel like OKC, they've done that exactly. And yes, we can talk about OKC for as long as we want and how they have all these draft picks and all these players, but it's the NBA. It is so hard to keep teams happy. And in all reality, yes, they are the youngest team in the league and they're the best team in the league, but windows can only last so long. And I think that if you're going to make a statement, you know, after coming out this year with a 66-14 record, potentially one of the best records in NBA history, or like a top 5, 6, whatever it might be, I feel like this is your year where you actually need to win, because once again, windows only last so long in the NBA. And then I'll follow it up and I'll say Boston goes back. And I think it could be a coin flip, but I'm going to say OKC, this is their year to win it all.
Yeah, and I'm going to steal a take from Everton Levy, because he's been a lifelong Thunder fan. It's like there's teams before that had all this young talent. You thought they were going to be the one, you know, with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden, and they end up falling short when it matters most. Don't be surprised if it happens again. Clip that.
We'll clip it. We'll save it for your reel. Once again, thank you so much for joining this edition of the Red Zone. Thanks to Julian. Connor, thank you so much for joining the show. Thank you to Joey. We have 2 Red Zones left after this one. We won't be here next week. Tune into some ISU baseball. But once again, thank you for listening every Thursday here on the Red Zone.